The following is a RackRadioShow.com exclusive.
And welcome to the Rack Extra Reviews right here on WildTalkRadio.com. He's Rock, I'm Lindsay, and we're back with episode 2 of Timeless. And we were off to the races in this episode.
Very nice pun.
Thank you. I thought so. So, we're back from World War I after the last episode, and we have jumped to the 1950s in Darlington, South Carolina, where we meet race car driver Ryan Millerson.
Left turns!
And this episode dealt all with the birth of NASCAR, which is always fascinating. For those of you that don't know, it was actually created by a bunch of bootleggers who were trying to evade the cops, as only Southerners can do.
Like any good sport.
Like any good sport. It always involves evading the cops. So anyway, so we see Millerson. He's in his house, his pregnant wife gets up and the two have a sweet moment together. They're dancing. And it's like, okay, well, who is this guy? What significance does he have? We see all the racing trophies. So it's like, obviously he's famous, right? Well, not so much. Cause then we cut to the baddies. They're in the car. They're driving to the house and it looks like, oh no, they're going to kill Ryan and the wife, but maybe not. Cause we cut to the present day where Wyatt, Lucy, and Rufus are, you know, trying to figure out what's going on. Cause they get the mothership detected alarm, and it's like, well, what's up? It's in the 1950s. It's in Darlington, South Carolina. And Lucy's like, yeah, nothing happened then. Hmm. Nothing. Not a thing. And they all kind of look at her like, what? What do you mean nothing happened? She's like, nothing significant happened. And then, you know, basically they trace it down to, oh, hey, well, maybe it's somebody before they were somebody. So we all jump in the time machine. We get in our 1950s attire. We go to Darlington, South Carolina, where Rufus is entirely uncomfortable because it is the South in the 1950s and people were jerks then.
I need to stop you for a second. I love the spot where they're getting their wardrobe change.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was commenting about his old Navy wear.
Well,
when you're on a budget, Old Navy is the place to go.
But Lucy showed up looking fabulous.
She did. But his comment about the old Navy thing stuff, it was like, okay, all right. I could do that.
For the record, they went for the Dior look with the big poofy skirt and then the nice, like, sweater type top or knit top for her that had a cute little button detail. She was adorable. I want that outfit. Anyway, moving on from that, we get dropped into the 1950s and we're at the racetrack. We're seeing, you know, Ryan get ready. And when they figure out it's Ryan Millerson, Wyatt has, like, pretty much a fanboy moment.
Not pretty much. It was a full-on fanboy moment.
Full-on fanboy moment because the dude is super into Ryan Millerson. He's super into NASCAR and racing in general. And, well, you know, he's like, oh my god, we're getting to meet Ryan Millerson, which is really cool. But, you know, we also get to meet somebody else, which is neat. We get to meet Wendell Scott, who is an African-American driver and the first African-American man, I should say, to win a NASCAR race, I believe is what they said.
I believe so, yeah.
Or a major NASCAR stakes race.
He was the first to win some sort of race.
He won a major race, but they were dicks to him and did not give him the trophy.
No, they...
Or the first place prize. He had to kind of fight him for the money, though.
Yeah, he was announced as third, even though he won by, like, 2 laps. And then they eventually gave in, but it was after all the fans left.
Which is so rude. So, so rude. People were such jerks back then. Anyway, moving on from that, so Wyatt gets to meet his heroes, and, well, Rufus makes the joke that, you know, hunk of junk, fast ride, smuggler, rebel, racer, and made the Fall Creek run in less than 12 parsecs. You know, Wendell Scott, he's like a real-life Han Solo. And also, there was a little awkwardness between Rufus and Wendell, because Rufus is like, nodded his head at him, and Wendell's like, what the hell are you doing?
He does the cool guy nodding of the head that the people do.
And Wendell had no idea what he was doing, and he was very confused. And Rufus is like, what? It's a thing!
It's a thing!
And it's
then
a
he,
thing!
And then he did something else like later on, and like, why you keep nodding at me? Like, that's what they do in the present day, but back then I was like, huh?
That wasn't a thing.
It wasn't a thing. The gracious nod, alright, I gotta say, cool, stop. Sup, man? Sup.
So, anyway, this is the point where we pretty much get the start of the Wyatt Logan backstory episode, and we find out that Wyatt, too, was a bootlegger, that he used to run moonshine over the Texas-Mexico border when he was about 15 years old. So it's like, okay, that's interesting. Mr. Straight Arrow Wyatt Logan has done some not-so-straight arrow things in his past. That's good to hear.
I love the moment where she had to grab the moonshine away from him.
Yes.
We got business we need to do. Takes the moonshine away. Lucy does.
Yeah. Wendell's like, well, because basically they got rid of the white people that were being jerks to Wendell. And Wendell's like, hey, thanks, here, have some booze. And Wyatt's like, okay. And it's a giant gallon of moonshine. And Lucy's like, no, 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 we can't do that right now. Later.
Later.
We'll drink later. That was fantastic. So anyway, we cut back to the bad guys, and well, they go back to Ryan Millerson. Basically, a fray breaks out where the baddies show up, and we have our heroes and the baddies and Ryan Millerson there, all there at the same time, and well, oops, we find out Ryan Millerson is a sleeper agent. What?
Say what?
And that's when they all start going, oh God, how is he a sleeper agent? There's no way he's a sleeper agent. And then they realize Ryan Millerson is one of the changes to history that Rittenhouse made. Basically, they put him back in time, and he did all these fantastic things, supposedly, and it's all ingrained in their memories, because it all happened before they were born, supposedly, is the way this all goes. So they all start freaking out, because it's like, oh God, this is a change to history, so we don't know what the original timeline was or how any of this actually was supposed to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a nice little twist there where you realize basically the implication of what has been done to history and the fact that they don't know what's been changed. And like Lucy starts legit having a panic attack because it's like, oh God, she's the historian. She doesn't know what's changed because all of this has been done behind the scenes and they're not necessarily going to know because it's like you boom, it's gone. It's not a fact that you readily recall.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, how would you know kind
right.
of thing.
Right.
So it's a nice little twist. So anyway, a fray breaks out, our heroes get away and they get away with Wendell. They go back to his garage, and basically there's a little tension between Wendell and the team as they first say that, well, Millerson is a communist, and they're here hunting commies, and then they basically are like, they've discovered the bomb in the car, which, by the way, there was a bomb in the car. I should have mentioned that earlier. Sorry. There's so much going on, but they figure out there's a bomb in Millerson's car, and they're basically trying to figure out why he would have that. And meanwhile, Wendell's like, what the actual hell is going on? And so he's like, yeah, so after Rufus breaks his car and, burns his arm, Wendell's like, yeah, get out of my shop. Y'all are menace, get out of my shop. So they leave, in quotations, and Wyatt comes back in, and basically he and Wendell have a heart-to-heart, and we find out that Wendell's father was a real jerk who left him when he was a kid for gambling, and we find out Wyatt's father was a real jerk who used to beat on him, make him leave him with a broken car and make him fix it, otherwise he had to walk home, and then lock him in the trunk of the car and drive around with the lights off in the woods just to freak him out. Like, all kinds of horrible, bad, abusive crap that got done to Wyatt.
Mm-hmm.
So, yay, more sad Wyatt backstory. Boo, more sad backstory. But anyway, basically the two bond over the backstory, and Wyatt helps Wendell fix the car, which allows him to then, basically convinces him, all right, y'all were cool, and I'll sneak you back into the race. So Rufus is up front with Wendell, we're driving, and Wendell's car, because it's a moonshine car, has a secret compartment, which they proceed to shove Lucy and Wyatt into. So now the two heroes that are, in love with each other
are trapped in a little confined space.
They're conveniently put into this little confined space, and of course we have that heart-to-heart between Lucy and Wyatt, where Lucy's still struggling with the fact that her mother is Rittenhouse and is a bad person, and, because she looked up to her mother so much, and Wyatt's like, I never really looked up to my dad, but once I got rid of his truck, because Wyatt, the whole end of Wyatt's story is he stole the truck and drove it into a lake, and he's like, after that, I just kind of let it all go.
Mm-hmm.
And, that was basically why its whole thing with Lucy is you just, at some point you learn to let it go. And so, the two get closer because she's claustrophobic. He pulls her in closer. They cuddle. They're almost kiss. And oh, oops. The trunk gets opened and Rufus and Wendell are like, awkward.
They got cockblocked.
Basically. But before this, the trunk gets open because they're searching all the cars coming into the race, and thankfully our heroes don't get found because, once again, they're in a secret compartment. So, yay. And there was a nice little, snarky comment to the idiot white people that were, being jerks to them, and they're like, Wendell was like, yeah, this is my cousin, George. And Rufus is like, yeah, hi, girl! And Wendell goes, we all don't look alike. He's like, yes, go Wendell, go Wendell, give it to him. So anyway, so we go back into the, basically, the climax of the episode. And while all this is going on, we cut back to Millerson, who is, at this point, we've discovered, on a suicide mission. He's going to drive his car into the stands where there's a bunch of high, basically, muckety-buck, upper motor executives. So, like, Ford, GM, all the big brands in the 50s, they were at this race because it's the Darlington 500. So it's a major race. So they all come in to check out drivers and cars and everything like that. So all the manufacturers are there. They're present. And that's what our heroes figure out in terms of that's the plan, is Rittenhouse is going to kill all the upper executives, and then they're going to take over all the motor companies, which takes over Detroit, which at this point in America and the economy, automobiles are the primary driving force in the economy. So that would give Rittenhouse a major foothold. And like, we can't have this. So anyway, so Millerson is preparing to go on his suicide mission because obviously he will die when the bomb explodes. And they've been kind of questioning his loyalty throughout the episode because basically he is a sleeper agent, but he's gotten married. His wife is pregnant. And they're like, why would you do that? Why would you be here for 7 years and, you know, basically know you're on a suicide mission and get married? And it's like, well, but why wouldn't you? You're here for 7 years. And basically he claims that, you know, the wife was a cover. And they're like, yeah, sure, okay. And so they go get the wife and they bring his pregnant wife to this race that he's going to die at, which is an absolutely horrific thought. And he's like, no, please don't have her here, don't have her see it. And they're like, basically either go through with it or we're gonna kill her. And it's like, wow,
well, okay then.
Okay, then. So they have her up in the stands. Millerson's preparing to go on the suicide run. He gets one last round of reporters and he's giving an interview when, hey, Wyatt shows up and just craziness ensues. Wyatt beats up one Rittenhouse guy, breaks his neck, killing him. And Millerson gets in the car. He arms the bomb. He's ready to go. And Wyatt shoots him and kills him after wrestling his gun from the other Rittenhouse guy. And well, of course, at this point, magically or not so magically, Millerson's wife appears, and of course she's all upset because her husband has been murdered before he can trigger this bomb, which she doesn't know about. And Wyatt, Lucy, and Rufus all jump in the car, which is armed, and they take off. And in the homage to NASCAR, we are driving through the pseudo South Carolina rolling hills, which looks suspiciously like California. But I digress. Like what you hear? Subscribe to The Rack on Apple Podcasts. Just search for The Rack Radio Show. And while you're there, leave us a review and tell us your thoughts on your favorite show on a Thursday night. So we're driving through the South Carolina countryside in a jacked up Chevy, basically, named Lucille. I'm not sure if that's a Walking Dead reference or not, but there you go. And we're being chased by the old school police cars. Rufus is losing his mind. Lucy's like, what's going on? And meanwhile, Wyatt is having the goddamn time of his life.
It's the time of his life, yeah.
He's speeding through the countryside in this car, and the whole time Rufus is like, you know, if we hit a bug, we're gonna blow up, right? Like, this thing is pressure sensitive. You know we're about to die, right? And Wyatt's like, yeah, but we're gonna have fun doing it! In typical redneck fashion. He's pretty much holding my beer at this point. So we race through, and Wyatt is able to ditch the cops and get back to Wendell's garage safely, where, of course, they, you know, immediately celebrate the fact that they got back, didn't get arrested, all this stuff, didn't blow up, and, you know, they're safe and sound, which they disarm the bomb. And we think it's all gonna work out as a happy ending for our heroes, because, you know, basically they wish Wendell luck in his future endeavors and hope that it all works out for him. Because Rufus is like a little, you know, like, you know they're not gonna give it to you, right? And Wendell's like, yeah, I know that. I don't give a crap. It's what I do. It's what I know that I've done. I don't care about them. This is about me and my accomplishments. Which Rufus is like, oh, cool. And he proceeds to teach him the nod. Which is like, okay, all right.
Bonding.
So before I go on, I missed one key part of this, which it's back in the beginning, because I'm just so excited about this episode. And that is that we have Lucy and Garcia Flynn meet face to face for the first time in this season. Basically, Garcia wants out in exchange for the information that Lucy's asking for, because he was instrumental in helping them figure out what's going on and where to go and that kind of thing in terms of the whole plot. And so she convinces him that she is sincere in wanting to stop Rittenhouse, and he tells her, you know, what she wants to know. And he's like, first one's free, next time it's going to cost you.
Right.
And she's like, yeah, okay, whatever.
Whatever you say, buckaroo.
And we're also dealing with residual issues of what has been done to Lucy in terms of Rittenhouse, what they did to her. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure we will get that in a later episode because they keep asking her about it. And she's like, I'm fine. I'm totally fine. Or like, you're not fine. She's like, I know, but I'm not going to talk about it.
Talk up low, open her face.
Yeah. She's going to lose her crap at some point. So anyway, our heroes come back. It's a happy-ish ending. Meanwhile, in the present day, we had Connor Mason trying to reclaim his life. He wants to do a speaking engagement, and the feds are like, no, you can't do it. And so he rebels, and he tries to do the thing, and right at the last second, they come and arrest him. Arrest, in quotations. And so now he's very angry with our most beloved federal agent because, well, she didn't let him do what he wanted to do. Agent Christopher, you know, basically betrays him and has him arrested and dragged off. So he's not happy with her. We'll see where that goes. That's going to blow up at some point, I'm sure.
Oh, most definitely.
Gia sees the burn on Rufus's arm. Gia freaks out because she's like, oh, God. Because basically earlier in the episode, she foresaw him burning his arm. And she's like, it's not real. And then he comes back with the burn on his arm. So I'm sure that's going to come into play, too.
Most likely, yes.
Yes. So, anyway, we cut to Rittenhouse, where basically the baddie number one and Lucy's mother are talking, and they're like, you know, I don't understand. Basically, creepy granddad dude, which they got back in last episode, she's like, is he ready to leave? Because basically, you know, you want to follow this manifesto, and we're ready for action, and we've already lost two agents to your daughter, who, by the way, you should have let me kill in 1918, because she's continuing to interfere. And her mom was like, just chill. So they come and get both of them. Somebody, some aide or intern or somebody comes and gets them. And is like, you need to see this. And of course, there's creepy granddad dude standing in front of this giant painting of history with his manifesto. And they're like, what is this? And he's like, this is my plan. And in a really creepy fascist manner. That's the best way I'm going to describe that. Other words do pop to mind. He's basically talking about how he's going to purify the human race by them going back in time. And he's using all these artistic metaphors, and I'm like, oh my God, would you stop? Would you please stop? Please don't use these in terms of this thing. You are ruining that. So, but yeah, basically, he's outlining what they're going to do to history to make it, to bend it to it, their will, to shape the human race the way that they want the human race shaped, and Redhead baddie, I never remember her name, but she's just like, all right, he's ready to lead. Yeah. And meanwhile, her mother, Lucy's mother, is standing there like, oh God, what have we done?
We screwed up somewhere.
We have screwed up. We have screwed up so bad. Because basically, you know, she's now seeing the error kind of her ways. So we'll see where that goes. Can Lucy's mom be redeemed? We'll have to see. But yeah, basically, this was a good episode. I enjoyed this episode.
That was fine.
You didn't get much in edgewise, sorry. So your thoughts?
I enjoyed it. It was good.
But next week's going to be interesting. Teaser is basically when time stands still, and it's basically when Lucy and Wyatt are going to hook up, we think.
Hey.
And it looks like we're going to the 70s, maybe. I don't know. But yeah. Anyway, probably my...
I didn't see the teaser, so I can't help you.
Okay. All right. Sorry. Yes, we're probably going to the 70s based on the clothes. Anyway, my favorite thing in this whole episode, and it's kind of, again, what they explored in the first episode, is the repercussions of Rittenhouse's actions prior to them getting the lifeboat back online, prior to them really figuring out the extent of the damage of what Rittenhouse has done, and how they have altered history, and how that has changed all the rules, because now it's, well, this is not the original timeline. Mm-hmm. And we don't remember what the original timeline was. We have no evidence, no proof, because obviously this has all happened in the past. This is all now recorded history. So whatever the original timeline was, it's gone. So the rules in terms of changing time and changing history, all that stuff is out the window. Now it's, we have to stop Rittenhouse. It doesn't matter how it happens, because we have to take out the sleeper agents. And if that means we alter history to do it, so be it. But it also opens the door in terms of, well, you know, obviously celebrities, people you admire, you know, everyday people could be a sleeper agent. You don't know who is and who isn't. And that's what's really nice, is it's not so blatantly obvious that who is and who isn't. So I like that. And also, I just have a hunch that somehow Millerson's kid is going to play a factor later on.
Why do you say that?
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure it won't, but there's just too much where basically the kid comes back for some kind of revenge, because what was interesting was they used the real names in this episode. So that could come back to bite them later. Millerson's unborn child could come back to bite them later, or he or she should come to help them, or could come to help them. We don't know. But it would be a nice tie back in if that happened, or somehow his kid showed up for revenge for his father.
Right.
So, but yeah, I think that does it for Timeless. What do you think?
Sounds good to me.
All right, well, you got stuff to plug, so plug away.
Rack Radio Show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Go check out our interview and our other Rack Extra reviews with the Royals, Max Brown, a.k.a. King Robert, available now on our website, rackradioshow.com.
And you can follow me on Twitter at LensWard, L-A-N-S-W-A-R-D. Go to my website, psychwarddesigns.com. And if you like my artwork, if you'd like to view more of it, you can go to my Behance at behance.net/LensWard. So for Rock, I'm Lindsay Ward. You've been listening to the Rack Extra Reviews Timeless Edition right here on WildTalkRadio.com. And we will be back next week with episode 3. Till then, bye!